Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining Jewish Stories and More. Today we have a very mysterious story about a letter which somebody wrote to the Rebbe from Russia in the bad years, and the years in which it was very, very difficult to get out of Russia if you were Jewish, anybody, but especially if you were Jewish, in the late 1960s. It was after the death of Stalin, may his name be erased, but things were still harsh in Russia, especially for Jewish people. The story is about the Kanelsky family, Rabbi Mordechai Kanelsky and his family, but Rabbi Mordechai Kanelsky is a shliach now in New Jersey, in Elizabeth, New Jersey, and the story is about when he was a little boy. He lived in Russia with his parents. I don't know if he had other siblings or not. And in those days, for a Jewish child to be in the public school was very, very spiritually dangerous. Of course, they taught that there's no such thing as God, Chas v'Shalom, and there were non-Jewish classmates, bad influence. And besides that, you had to attend on Shabbos. And when you attended on Shabbos, if the teacher told you had to write or erase, then you had to write or erase, breaking Shabbos, Chas v'Shalom. And so, of course, the Jews didn't want to go to the public school. But it was a crime for a Jewish child and their parents if the child did not go to the public school. There was no such thing as having a choice to go to a kosher day school or a kosher cheder or even after school, Hebrew school, no such thing. It was completely illegal and very dangerous. So what did the Kanelskys do? They sent their child to the school, but they got a doctor to write a note for every single Shabbos so that he wouldn't have to go on Shabbos. But after a while, the doctor stopped writing the notes. The doctor was a lady. She didn't want to write any more notes. I'm guessing she was afraid she would get in trouble because they were just really excuses. So now what? Should Mordechai be sent to school on Shabbos? No, couldn't be. Should they send him the other days, but on Shabbos, make up an excuse every week for why he couldn't go? They were afraid to do that also. But if he stayed home, then it was very dangerous because the neighbors would see that he wasn't going to school and they would report him. And it was a crime, and it was very dangerous. They could be punished, Chas v'Shalom, very severely. But in the end, that's what they decided to do. They decided that he would stay home and hide in the cellar all day. And I believe he did have a teacher who also hid in the cellar and taught him every day for, I'm not sure exactly how long, some years, I believe. But it was a frightful existence. In fact, one morning, government officials knocked on the door. "We want to search the house," they said. The boy, who was at that time 8.5 years old, hid in the cellar. He was terrified. Baruch Hashem, they didn't find him. But at that point, the parents realized he could no longer stay in Russia. They had to get out of Russia. But how could they even get guidance from the Rebbe? A plan, bracha, very difficult. You couldn't just call the Rebbe's office. You couldn't just write a letter because the Russian post office, they opened up all the letters to see what people were writing. It was like being in a prison. And they listened in on the phone calls. You couldn't just call somebody and talk freely. You were being listened to. Very cruel and very frightful situation. So instead, Rabbi Kanelsky, Nussin was his first name, the father, he thought of a plan. He sent a family photo to his cousin, Rabbi Naftali Hertz Minkowitz, who lived in Crown Heights, and he wrote there a coded message. The message said, "Show the picture to Grandpa and tell him we really want to see him." Now, who was Grandpa? That was the code word for the Rebbe. "And we really want to see him" was a code word for, "I need to get out of Russia. It's too hard here." Many Hasidim stayed in Russia, no matter how hard it was. but he felt that for his son, it was too hard. And this was a coded, secret code letter that he sent to his cousin. Rabbi Minkowitz received the photo in the fall of 1969, 5729. It was the eve of Yom Kippur that he had a chance to give the letter to the Rebbe with a photo, because on the eve of Yom Kippur, the Rebbe would give out lekach, honey cake, to everybody who came past the door of his office, along with the bracha, and thousands of people would go for that purpose. And as Rabbi Minkowitz went by, he handed the picture to the Rebbe, I'm assuming also with a note. Maybe the note was written on the back of the picture. The Rebbe took the picture and placed it in the desk drawer without saying a word. Or perhaps Rabbi Minkowitz gave over the message verbally that they really wanted to see him. Not sure exactly how the detail went. But the Rebbe definitely got the picture and definitely got the message that they wanted to see him. 3 months later, the Kanelsky family in Moscow received a response from their cousin. That's how long messages took to get through. The message said, "We received the photo. It was given to Grandpa, and he didn't say anything." The Rebbe just took the photo. He didn't answer anything about the question, basically, that they wanted to see him, that the Kanelskis wanted to see the Rebbe. He didn't say anything. The family was very disappointed. No response from the Rebbe. They didn't know what to do. As if that wasn't enough, when Reb Nosson went later to the government office to give in the papers requesting to leave Russia, the clerk actually tore up the papers and said in a very cruel voice, "You'll never leave Russia. You'll die here." Rabbi Nosson Kanelsky was very, very disappointed. Went home, brokenhearted. A year and a few months passed by, a year and 3 months. They didn't know what to do. They were very sad. The situation seemed hopeless and dangerous. But Reb Nosson did not give up. He decided to try again. He understood that he had to keep trying. In the middle of 1970, he attempted once more to obtain an exit visa to be able to go out of Russia. This time, he bribed one of the clerks with 5,000 rubles, a huge amount of money at that time, and it required tremendous mesiras nefesh, tremendous self-sacrifice to gather together so much money. I'm sure he had to ask people to give him money. Within 5 months, incredibly, miraculously, they received their visas. They received permission to leave Russia. 5 days later, they were on a plane to Vienna, Austria, and from there to Israel. Baruch Hashem, eventually they made their way all the way to New York, and they stayed with their cousins, the Minkowitzes. It was tremendous relief. Baruch Hashem, they were out of that prison called the Soviet Union, that cruel prison. But there was still a big mystery. To their surprise, Rabbi Naftali opened a closet and took out the picture that they had asked him to give to the Rebbe. The Kanelskis were confused. Why do you still have the picture? He told them something that was so surprising. He said, for a whole year, the picture had remained in the Rebbe's drawer. But at the end of the next year, on the eve of Yom Kippur, at the beginning, rather, of the next year, just before Yom Kippur, as he passed by the Rebbe for lekach, so a year after he gave the picture to the Rebbe took out the picture and said, "Here, I don't need this anymore." It was only then that Rabbi Minkowitz realized that the Rebbe had been holding on to it the whole time. He didn't just stick it away someplace. He was keeping it someplace in the drawer for a special reason. So for one whole year, this picture remained in the Rebbe's desk drawer right next to where the Rebbe sat and worked every day and learned and did all of his work. So during their stay in New York, Rabbi Nosson and his son had yechidus. They had an opportunity to have a private audience with the Rebbe. For the first 10 minutes, the Rebbe spoke with the father, Rabbi Nosson, about how Jews are doing in Moscow. At the end, He asked, how did they get out of Russia? Rabbi Nosson said, I gave a $5,000 ruble bribe to the clerk, and that's how I got out. The Rebbe smiled and said, are you really sure that's what helped you? Rabbi Nosson said, yes, that was it. The bribe was what made the difference. The Rebbe smiled even more, and he asked again, are you really sure that's what helped you? At that moment, Rabbi Nosson understood. The Rebbe had been involved all along. The quiet but powerful influence of a tzaddik works in ways that aren't always immediately visible. In other words, the Rebbe was working on it. The picture was in the drawer. The Rebbe was thinking about it. The Rebbe was perhaps davening about it. Perhaps he was mentioning it at his father's gravesite, at the Ohel. However it is that the Rebbe does these things. But the Rebbe was making clear that it wasn't the bribe. It was that the Rebbe was working on things. And this is the way of a tzaddik. A tzaddik can help to bring brachas to people from Hashem, to channel brachas from Hashem. Of course, all brachas come from Hashem. But the tzaddik has ways to help bring the brachas to the person. So too, every tzaddik in every generation, just as Moshe did, just as all the great tzaddikim do. And especially when we are learning Torah, and we are doing mitzvahs and davening, and trying to add in this all the time, especially about learning about Mashiach and Geula, which is a straight path to bringing the Geula, with your help and all of our effort, may it happen immediately. Thank you so much for joining Jewish Stories and More.